Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to this press conference with General Counsel Chairman Ambassador Bruce Gosper and Director General Pascal Lamy. Thank you for your patience. The General Counsel has just concluded. Chairman Gosper will begin with a brief statement, followed by the Director General, and then we'll take your questions. We'll have about 30 minutes. Ambassador Gosper, please.
Thank you very much. Welcome. The purpose of the informal heads of delegation meeting, which was just held and which I convened in cooperation with the Director General, is to enable the Director General to report to members on the proceedings of the meeting held this morning with major providers of trade financing to examine the impact of the financial crisis on developing country access to financing of imports and exports. Today's meeting was also an opportunity for an exchange of views, the meeting this afternoon, concerning the impact of the global financial crisis on the availability of trade financing and more generally on the trade implications of the crisis and the response of the WTO. The Director General is available to brief you on this morning's meeting, and I'll now pass over to the Director General.
Thanks, Bruce, and I'm glad you are here so that everybody can see I'm speaking under your control. As expected, this afternoon's meeting, where I reported on this morning's meeting, was partially devoted to this trade finance issue, but also to more generally the impact of the financial crisis on trade. Now, starting with trade finance, what I reported to the members from the findings, the discussion, the interaction which took place during the whole morning, with a panel of commercial banks, export credit agencies, and international financial institutions, World Bank, regional development banks from all over the world. The message on trade finance is reasonably clear. First, looking at the market, the situation is bad, and the odds that it gets better are very thin. And this is true both in terms of volume and in terms of prices. Volumes have decreased and prices have increased, which is the signal of a market where there is a mismatch between supply and demand. Why has this happened? Two main reasons. First, lack of liquidity. Second, risk reassessment. What is done and what has to be done? Again, not that the World Trade Organization is a prescriptor. This is outside the competence, the remit, the perimeter of the World Trade Organization, but it impacts trade a lot, which is why countries like Egypt or Brazil, to take these two examples, have supported us doing this. Number of actions already taken to try and mitigate this situation. The World Bank has announced a tripling of the ceiling of trade finance guarantees under the IFC business they have on this, and they are pushing it from $1 billion to $3 billion, which is a big, very big increase. The president of the World Bank has just announced that he would be putting this to his wall. Export credit agencies, who are regrouped in what is called the Bern Union, have obviously stepped in. Their business has increased by 30% in the last 2 months because they cover not the liquidity part of the problem, but the risk part of the problem. And they've been backed to do that by some national governments. Three examples. Germany has just done that. Hong Kong has just done that. Japan, we understand, is in the way of doing that. So there's already been a reaction. More needs to be done, and that's what they all say. First, in providing liquidity, and if necessary, earmarked liquidity. Second, in mitigating the effect of the increased perception of risks, which basically means that a number of public authorities, government, central banks, need to step in to provide more support, as, by the way, they've already done it, to mitigate more complex risks than trade finance, which we all know is not rocket science. What's the size of the liquidity problem? Rough number, which appeared in the discussion, not something that's the result of complex calculations or simulations. The order of magnitude of what they see as the lack of liquidity is $25 billion, which in itself is a big number, as compared to other numbers which we've seen recently appearing when governments and central banks have stepped in, probably a relatively small amount compared to the amounts injected into the banking markets. Knowing that doing this in trade finance has a huge multiplicator effect in terms of keeping trade afloat, especially for developing countries and notably emerging markets, which are big trading markets nowadays, but where the risk assessment has obviously deteriorated. Medium term, there is an obvious need to improve mechanisms of information, risk sharing, risk assessment techniques, data collections, and we'll be working on that. The basic message, in order for your readers or viewers to sort of try and understand what they're after, is very simple. The basic message is that trade finance is the most secure, the safest, the less toxic asset which you can trade in banking and insurance. So on the one side, it's much safer than many other risks. On the other side, the absence of coping with that is a big hit for poor developing countries. And this is the message which will be sent to finance and leaders meeting in Washington on the 15th of November on this trade finance issue. And I hope they will pay the necessary attention to this part of the problem. Second, more generally, on trade and the financial crisis, as expected, many members expressed views on this during the informal session of the General Council. We basically heard two messages. One, please make sure we all keep trade open, which means resisting protectionist pressures, which will be there in the coming months. Second, let's try and reinforce this insurance policy we have together on trade by concluding the round as soon as possible, which means many calls to achieve modalities on ag and on industry before the end of the year, which then would mean obviously to step up the pace of work here. This message by those who've emitted it was coupled with this notion that it's extremely important that for developing countries the development content of the round should materialize as soon as possible in the background of this economic crisis. These messages will also go to the G20 meeting, not least by the members of the G20, most of them, not totally all, but most of them being members of the WTO. The best way to ensure coherence between what we say here and what will be said in Washington is that we recognize that WTO is member-driven, that the G20 is member-driven, and as there is a large commonality of members, coherence should not be a problem, even if the main agenda for the meeting on the 15th is the coordination of economic stimulus and the first steps towards a more efficient global finance regulation. So that's my briefing. To conclude it, I'll just pick up on one sentence, which I think is a pretty good summary of the situation, which was pronounced by the chair of the ACP group this afternoon, when he said that trade is the oxygen for developing countries. Let's make sure, in addressing this various bits of the problem, that oxygen does not dry up.
Questions? Pas de questions? Aude Markovitch, please.
J'ai une question concernant le message que vous attendriez de Washington. Vous allez, Monsieur le Directeur Général, donner le message à Washington que vous venez de nous décrire. Est-ce que vous attendez que Washington délivre un message, notamment sur une prochaine réunion ministérielle à l'OMC ? Est-ce que vous pensez qu'il serait envisageable qu'une réunion ministérielle se tienne d'ici la fin de l'année ? Merci.
Non, je n'ai pas prévu d'aller à Washington pour une raison simple, c'est que ils doivent, de mon point de vue, concentrer leur attention sur là où ils ont besoin de décider et où ils sont en état de décider au niveau chef d'État et de gouvernement et ministre des Finances. C'est pas une réunion des chefs d'État et de gouvernement et des ministres du Commerce, c'est une réunion des chefs d'État et de gouvernement et des ministres des Finances. Donc, la priorité, c'est la coordination de la réaction des politiques macroéconomiques, tous ces paquets de stimulation que l'on voit apparaître ici et là, et dont on sait très bien qu'ils n'auront tous leurs effets que s'ils sont coordonnés, et puis deuxièmement, le problème de poser les premières pierres de ce que pourrait être un système de régulation de la finance globale un peu plus efficient que celui que nous avions jusqu'à présent. Il est évident que dans les prescriptions générales pour faire face à la crise, la partie commerciale tiendra sa place dans le communiqué du G20 et il y a plusieurs manières de s'assurer que ce soit le cas. La première, c'est que j'en parle avec les intéressés, ce que j'ai fait et ce que je vais continuer à faire, et je ne suis pas le seul d'ailleurs. Le président du Conseil général est aussi associé à cela, ne serait-ce que parce que le pays dont il vient est un acteur, disons, substantiel de ce G20. Et d'autre part, parce que il y a autour de la table du G20, sur les 20 présents à la table du G20, il y en a 19 qui sont membres de l'OMC, et donc, comme je l'ai dit tout à l'heure, je ne pense pas que les questions de cohérence soient un problème. Sur la deuxième partie de votre question, ça dépend deux conditions, comme d'habitude. Une condition politique, y a-t-il l'énergie politique pour boucler ce qui n'avait pas pu être bouclé en juillet d'ici la fin de l'année? Et là, vous me permettrez d'attendre le lendemain de cette réunion pour répondre à cette question. Et deuxièmement, avons-nous les conditions techniques pour que le ministre puisse se prononcer sur des choses claires qui ont été suffisamment préparées? À ce stade, je n'ai pas de réponse à cette question. Je sais que les membres y travaillent, je sais que les présidents des groupes de négociation y travaillent. Si je devais donner aujourd'hui la réponse à cette question, je dirais, techniquement, je ne sens pas, aujourd'hui, je ne me sens pas de convoquer les ministres la semaine prochaine. Il faut sans doute encore travailler. Est-ce que ceci veut dire que je ne les convoquerai pas? Non. Je reste sur ce que j'ai dit, de manière, je crois, assez constante depuis un certain temps. Si les conditions sont réunies, et il m'appartient de contribuer à essayer de les réunir, alors effectivement, il y a la possibilité de réunir les ministres avant la fin de cette année. Il faut que ces deux conditions soient réunies.
La prochaine question est pour Ram Etwaria. Allez-y, Ram.
J'ai une première question sur l'absence de M. Zolik et de M. Dominique Strauss-Kahn. Est-ce que vous ont informé des raisons de leur absence ici? Et la deuxième question concerne la somme de 25 milliards de dollars que vous avez mentionné. J'aimerais savoir d'où vous sortez ce chiffre.
Sur la première question, et Dominique Strauss-Kahn et Bob Zolik, par les temps qui courent, ont beaucoup à faire. Et je comprends parfaitement que, notamment à la veille de cette réunion du G20, il n'ait pas eu le temps de faire un aller-retour à Genève. Ça prend un peu de temps, c'est fatigant. Ce qui m'importe dans cette affaire, c'est que il fasse. Et si je prends l'exemple de la Banque mondiale, je préfère que Bob Zolik soit à Washington, dans son bureau, en train de travailler avec les membres du board pour passer sa ligne de crédit IFC de 1 milliard de dollars à 3 milliards de dollars, plutôt que de faire un aller-retour ici pour faire un exposé qui aurait sans doute été extrêmement intéressant et apprécié par les participants. Mais quand on n'a pas beaucoup de temps, il faut choisir les priorités. Et la priorité, de mon point de vue, pour prendre cet exemple, c'est qu'il décroche de son board son autorisation pour avoir ses 3 milliards sur le trade finance. S'il arrive à faire ça, non seulement je lui pardonne volontiers de ne pas avoir fait le déplacement, et en plus je lui paierai une bonne bouteille. Sur la deuxième question, ce chiffre de 25 milliards de dollars que j'ai indiqué avec, disons, des précautions méthodologiques, et l'ordre de grandeur tel qu'il a été indiqué ce matin par un certain nombre d'opérateurs de marché sur, disons, le déficit de liquidité que l'on constate aujourd'hui sur le segment trade finance du marché du crédit. Hein ? C'est un segment spécifique, c'est un business spécifique dans l'ensemble des marchés de crédit, le financement des importations et des exportations court terme, moyen terme et long terme est, disons, un métier particulier qui est d'ailleurs assez ancien, qui préexistait à beaucoup de métiers qu'on trouve dans les banques maintenant. Et donc sur ce segment-là, leur évaluation de, disons, du déficit de liquidité, c'est de l'ordre de 25 milliards de dollars. Ça ne veut pas dire que c'est pas 20, ça ne veut pas dire que c'est pas 30, mais ça veut dire que c'est pas 5, et ça veut dire que c'est pas 500. Voilà.
Jamil, please.
let me, two questions. First, on this clarification of the 25 billion, is it equivalent to 25 billion of exports? And if not, how much then it is, how much does it result into in terms of trade? And secondly, in one of your background notes that was sent to us before the meeting, it was said that you favored, or at least there was a consensus that shared risks would be one of the possibilities between commercial banks and governmental agencies. What is your opinion about this? Should there be a, let's say, a more general risk sharing as it there was in the banking sector in overall? Thank you.
On your first question, again, this 25 billion is a gross, rough estimate of where the imbalance is in terms of lack of liquidity. Now, available liquidity in trade finance cannot be directly related to trade flows, not least because available liquidity is revolving. Operations which you finance, you start the operation, you finish the operation, your credit line is there. With the same credit line, you can finance another operations when the first one unfolds. So there is a huge multiplier effect from the availability of a credit line to the amount of trade which you can finance, and then depending, of course, on the maturity of the finance. If it's 1 month, if it's 9 months, if it's 1 year, if it's 2 years, and you have trade finance, notably for equipment, which goes up to 5 or 6 years. But most of the market is on short-term finance. On the second question, first, I'm glad you read the background notes which we provide you with. That's a nice and appreciated feedback. Second, this business of trade finance, as we've been sort of working with it for some time, and I remember the April meeting which we had with basically the same people, is basically about risk sharing. Commercial banks who are either liquidity adverse or risk adverse share a part of the risk with export credit agencies who take the risk part of it with insurance systems. These are totally private operations, and these insurance systems can be backed by public finance. So this is risk sharing. When the IFC puts up its fund for regional development banks to share risk with local commercial banks, this is risk sharing. So the sort of rationale for having these three categories of actors in the room is precisely that they share risk. Now, how can they share more risk? That's what we've been discussing. And obviously, as I said, there is a case to be made that public systems step in a bit more at a time where both liquidity and risk assessment is changing. But there is also a sort of big virtue without even public sort of public money in, for instance, trying to incentivize them to put sort of liquidity pools together. Because if you put sort of liquidity pools together, you multiply the effect of revolving. You sort of amortize the revolving characteristic of the credit on a larger scale. So, co-financing, risk-sharing, which is a sort of the normal way they operate, should be, in this case, stepped up and enhanced.
If we keep the question short, we can get three more in. A challenge for Ravi. No. You're next in the queue. It's FIFO.
My question is both to the Director General as well as to the Chair of the General Council. The question is that whether it is credible to hold a ministerial meeting at a time when there is a massive major change in Washington. New administration is about to come into office. There is no trade promotion authority to the current administration, and it's a lame duck administration. So how credible is this whole business of convening a ministerial meeting? Are you sending a signal to the Obama administration that you don't want to discuss with them and you want to discuss with a lame duck government?
Ali, you probably know the history of trade negotiations with the U.S. Much better than I do, because you've been following this for the last 50 years. I've only been following this for the last 20 years. So, remember, you were around lame duck administration. NAFTA, lame duck administration. China PNTR, lame duck administration. So that's the fact. Now, the politics of that are that the U.S. administration is negotiating at the negotiating table. And it's not for me, maybe for you, and that's your point, but not for me to say, I'm sorry, Mrs. Schwab, but you're not going to be there from the 20th of January, so I decide you're not going to be there from today. It's a simple reality. So the U.S. authorities have the possibility to negotiate. What we are discussing now is modalities. It's not the final deal, which anyhow will have to go to Congress for ratification. So this is where the real issue lies at the end of the day. But, you know, I cannot decide, nor would I advise other WTO members to decide for a government that negotiates whether the authority of this government to negotiate is half full, half empty, 80%, 30%, 100%. The international system doesn't work like that.
Mr. Chairman, would you like to respond?
Only to say I think you should direct your question to the United States.
Can I also come back, Keith? With your
I'm sorry, Ravi. Your colleagues are in the queue. It'll be Dan followed by Jonathan.
Sorry, Director General. Again, a question on this $25 billion figure, because I'm not quite clear on having the financial background like you have. When you say it's a lack of liquidity, are you talking about money that simply is not there under any conditions, or is it money that is there but it's simply too expensive? And if I may, also on the issue of the ministerial, you mentioned the political criteria that need to be met in order for a ministerial to be convened. There were a number of countries today which expressly put out a message that they want a modalities deal by the end of the year. Do you think that these messages delivered today would make you more inclined to convene a ministerial than you would be at the start of the day?
On your first question, how to try and explain this simply. Liquidity for a bank is the product they provide you with. That's what, if you go to a bank, it's because in most cases you need liquidity which you do not have. You just borrow money which you do not have. When I was CEO of Crédit Lyonnais, a long time ago, and that was a bank which had quite a number of problems, and where liquidity was scarce. And I had committees where asset management, capital markets, corporate finance, syndication division for big loans, and trade finance, and I simplify the game, would compete for equity and liquidity. And they would argue, I need more liquidity because my business is more profitable than the business of my neighbor in the committee. So, liquidity allocation for a bank is always a problem. Even if there is plenty of liquidity, the cost of liquidity is not zero. So, liquidity allocation is a problem which all bank managers are confronted with. And the question is, do I give a credit line of X to my trade finance department? And then the trade finance department will subdivide this X credit line into what they can do in operations. What's the problem for the moment is that given the shrinkage of liquidity, which stems from the huge deleveraging of the credit market which is happening, it's scarce. And the notion of how scarce it is that if there was overall planet-wise a sort of 25 billion more, then we could sort of face the demand of our clients. Now, you're right, there is a question of volume and cost. But my big argument, and probably the big argument of these trade finance practitioners vis-à-vis their own bosses in commercial banks is, boss, I need liquidity because I'm in a good business. It's safe. And by the way, margins have gone up, which is one of the problems of affordability. But if I'm a banker within the system, I think I'll have a good case to make to my boss that he could give more to me and less to corporate finance or to capital markets. On your second question, yes, we've heard quite a sort of a voluminous number of calls for modalities before the end of the year this afternoon. Does this change our sort of stance on the decision whether or not to have a ministerial? Bit too soon to say. As I said, we need political energy and we need the right technical positions because substance drives the process and not deadlines. If this is sort of gathering political energy, and again, we will see whether or not this momentum increases in the times to come, then one of the conditions might be fulfilled. But I'm like St. Thomas. I need to put my finger to make sure that the thing is there. Nothing to do with sanctitude, of course, but with Thomasitude.
Last question for Jonathan Lynn, please. Can you turn your phone off, Jonathan, please?
No, his phone rings.
two related questions. On the problem of the lack of liquidity, I've heard from some bankers that that the fall in volume reflects the fact that commodity prices have come down and therefore the cost of financing a cargo has also gone down, and also because of the economic slowdown there's now less demand for goods and so there's less need for liquidity. Is that something that you also discussed this morning? In other words, is the liquidity tightness purely a problem of the crisis, or does it reflect some, if you like, positive factors in, or neutral factors in the outside market? And secondly, in the discussion today, did anyone cite any specific examples of of cargoes, if you like, being left on the quayside or ships being left empty because people couldn't get trade finance? Or is this still at the stage of a concern or a fear or anecdotal discussions? Thank you.
On the first one, you're absolutely right. There is a decrease in trade flows and a decrease in commodity prices, which have reduced the demand for trade finance. Both volumes and prices have led to a decrease in the demand. But if that decrease in the demand was such that it matches supply, then trade finance would not be tight. So the problem is not the absolute level of supply and demand. Demand has been reduced, but supply has been reduced more than demand, which is why we still have this imbalance on the market, which translates, and if you want, I mean, the evidence of that, which translates into the price. Some trade finance operations, which were 80 basis points a number of months ago, are now 500 basis points. So that's the evidence of the imbalance in the market and the tightness, including in liquidity. What was the second question?
It was about the...
We have plenty of anecdotal evidence, and those of you who write on this, and a number of you or your colleagues have written on this, know that you have to start the story with the name of the dog, and we've had quite a number of names of dogs in trade finance in recent weeks. There is no statistical good evaluation of this. Some use as an advance indicator the Baltic Dry Index, which is well known to many of you. Some of the practitioners this morning made the case that it's an extremely volatile index because it's a marginal index, which is the marginal freight where you take cargo when you're in a shipping business. Others have said, and I learned that on this occasion, that a better indication of advanced trade finance volumes is the number of messages on SWIFT, SWIFT being the international network which connects payment systems by commercial banks, financial institutions, and central banks, where you send a message when you send a payment from Sao Paulo to Istanbul. The trade finance thing, if it's not on totally open account, goes through the system, and this is an indication. But for the rest, I mean, we don't have more anecdotal evidence than what you can gather here and there, and you can gather plenty of that.
Thanks very much. Thanks for your patience.